Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Reborn Identity.
If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and will heal their land.
Another segment of the Reborn Identity. This is Vivian Kelly. Ruthie Munoz is off today. She's celebrating Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to everyone listening. It has been a wonderful Mother's Day for me, and I'm just glad that I've seen, you know, we went to the restaurant today and we saw a lot of people taking out their moms, and that was a really nice thing. So, as I said, welcome back to the Reborn Identity. Tonight we are, we have a lot of information tonight. We have Kim Carter from Time for Change Foundation, and she's going to be speaking to us regarding her book that will be coming out, as well as her journey into making the lives better of those who have lost their voice or do not have a voice. And for all those women that are out there incarcerated and have their children, I just, you know, my heart goes out to you, because I know it's hard to not be able to be with your children for some. So a happy Mother's Day and a prayer and a blessing that I will send out to you this evening. As we know, we have prayer requests, and we have a plethora. Well, actually, not a plethora. That would be a little bit of a too much. But we do have a good portion of individuals who have given us the information about their situation. And we're not going to name any names, but we're going to just mention the situation. A family is right now suffering because they've allowed a family member to come and live with them, and in the process, in the dynamics, a lawsuit came about. And you would think, you know, when you do good for somebody, how they're being repaid. So we need to pray for that specific family. Another is a father whose son was in a car accident. There is some dynamics there that we cannot elaborate, but we pray for unity within the family. Another young man, he lost his mother about a month and a half, maybe 2 months ago, and he has thought of taking his life. So he is now under supervision and seeking help. So we need to place those individuals on our prayer list. Another is Ruthie's healing, and she's doing well. She's going to be graduating next weekend. And, you know, a prayer of blessing to her. And a prayer for those who are experiencing a lot of financial grief and turmoil. And a father sent me, another father sent me his information to please pray for his daughter. And a young lady is asking for us to pray for her father, who's recuperating from surgery. However, there were some complications, and he's not healing as quickly, and he's had to go back into surgery. So those are basically the ones that I do have. And one more that I have to put it out there, and it's there's, and I can name the name, it Mrs. Maynard. She's experiencing health issues. So with that said, we need to pray for her, and pray for in our families, basically, because we're going through a lot of things and that we shouldn't be going, and we know we will be going through them, so that we may be steadfast, that we may have faith, and that we may know that things are help is coming. So with that said, I am going to pray for those who have requested. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for this wonderful day that you have given us. Another day to worship you, to realize who you are, and to be a light to others. Lord, we come to you placing these requests at the foot of the throne, that you may be able to bless them. And a special prayer and a blessing that it may go out to the women that are incarcerated, who have not been able to see their children. and or whose children have not wanting to be part of their life. Lord, it is not an easy place to be. Bless the mothers that are still out there that are homeless. Please bless those mothers that are single, widowed. Just keep them in your heart, Lord, as I know you do. Take care of those who take care of others, and in return they are hated and are mistreated. And Lord, thank you so much for all that you do and all the blessings. We thank you now for all the things that are going to manifest. Thank you so much for everything again. In your name, amen. Well, tonight, as I said, we don't have Ruthie with us. She is taken off, and rightfully so. She's getting ready for so many things. But we will have Kim Carter coming on our show with just an impactful woman. But before she does, let me explain to you where I'm coming from. As you know, we check in, and Ruthie and I usually check in, and we talk about what happened this week. For those who have not been tuning in, we've been having Deborah Peguet speaking on taming your tongue, taming your stress, and, of course, taming your finances. And she will also be a guest next Sunday, and she'll be with her husband, Darnell, speaking, and more about relationships and finances, a little bit more about that. But this week I decided to literally sit down and reevaluate my character, my actions, as I always do. However, this was more of a special point because of the fact that I wanted to make sure that my tongue reflects that of Jesus Christ's character. And, of course, you've known, as you've been hearing in those shows before, that I have a judgmental tongue and some other tongues that I need to, that the Lord has been working on me. Well, in reflecting in my devotions, I realized what I'm saying to other people and thinking before I speak. It has been a challenge, but a journey well worth it, because I'm stopping and realizing that most of the things that I was about to say to different people were coming out of anger and were coming out of disappointment and resentment within me, where, you know, as you know, I speak and I motivate. I'm a speaker, and I always motivate women and empower women and men to, you know, get rid of their junk, their attitudes, their past. And this time, I had to actually remember what I wrote in my book and continue to practice it. And so I had to, at times I had to hold my peace. Exodus 14:14, the Lord shall fight your battles and ye shall hold your peace. Now, don't get me wrong. Holding your peace does not state that you can let people run over you. But it does mean that before we jump the gun, before we speak out of hastiness, we need to think, what are our motives? Is it coming from a pure area? Is it coming from just, where is it coming from, you know? And if you have these issues, please, 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 send me a note. Let me know. Tell me what you think, what you're struggling with, because of the fact that our tongues get us in trouble. It is our very tongue that if we were just to be quiet, even being silent when you need to speak is also being, is doing it wrong. But just think, and there's many issues that come with a unruly tongue. But thank goodness that we have Christ teaching us really basically how to be. That's where the fruit of the Spirit come in. And if I say it once, I've said it 1,000 times, our tongue can make us or break us. There's a flattery tongue. There's a boasting tongue. It's just the many tongues that we go through and we don't even know it. So that was not an aha for me, but the results of what exactly it is that the Lord wants us to take care of. So I know that I'm going to be bringing Kim Carter after our wonderful break, and we're going to listen to one of our songs that Ruthie loves to play, and we'll be back, and it's with Lisa Pierre's Surrender. Resurrection. That is one of my favorite songs now. It's, you know, we women need to be empowered to be resurrected from wherever we're at, whether it's domestic violence, sexual abuse, rape, it doesn't matter. We have the power. And we need people that will be that voice for those women who have lost their inner voice. Before the introduction, I must say why I named the segment Another Type of POWs, which is Prisoner of Wars in the United States. Not to make light of those who have served our country honorably, that I'm referring to, but to an inner war within the confinements of the United States prison system and the women who are serving time. We have all been victims of some sort of injustice or crime, but the inner war refers to the social and economic injustices that has our young women in jail. These invisible bars that keep us in the muck that we are in is where freedom lacks. And freedom is not a choice. And the sentence at times is emotional, spiritual, and psychological death. You know, not to be sensational, but I have met several women who have been incarcerated that if someone spoke to them prior to, if someone has taken the time to empower these young ladies, they would have never reached prison. Yet, I feel that society has a way of dismissing that which is obvious. We have given up on our women, on our young women. And with that said, tonight we will hear what you and I can do in the season of change. Kim Carter is the founder and executive director of Time for Change Foundation, certified in accounting with an emphasis on not-for-profits. Kim was inspired to leave the corporate world in 2002 to start Time for Change Foundation. Motivated by her own experiences as a formerly incarcerated woman, Kim made it her mission to keep women and children, make the transition from homelessness and recidivism, I can never say that word, to self-sufficiency. Kim will help me on that one when she comes on. But today, she's a powerful voice for women who bear the scars of poverty, homelessness, and incarceration. It is Kim's belief that by providing women with training and the opportunity to develop life skills in a nurturing and supportive environment, they will become independent, active participants in their communities and in society in general. She aspires to the work of her idol, Harriet Tubman, by lighting a path and leading others to freedom. Freedom from addiction and incarceration. Her motto is that a lit candle loses nothing when it lights another. And that is so true. That is so true. Tonight, I welcome, and it's an honor to have Kim Carter from Time. Kim, I keep on getting that wrong. But
it's Time for Change Foundation.
It's Time for Change Foundation, and I always want to say it's time for a change. And, you know, I've been told, no. So, Kim, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Come on our show.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I've been reading a lot lately, and there's this word that I have been seeing more and more, which is recidivism. How do you say that one?
It's recidivism, and what it basically means is for a person who has been repeatedly incarcerated.
Wow.
And so, for example, the state of California has a 7 out of 10 recidivism rate, which means that 7 out of 10 will come out of prison and go back in, and they're recycled in and out over periods of time. And so one of the things that people work on is try to reduce recidivism by getting to the root causes of incarceration and addressing those needs.
So your own story inspired you to build this organization.
Yes,
tell
ma'am.
Us.
Well, I can tell you that I don't know the day or the hour or what specific event led to it, but over the years of being abused, of being on drugs and alcohol, low self-esteem, being molested, at some point I developed a sense of trying to find an alternative lifestyle, and that lifestyle was to escape my horrible conditions. And I found that refuge in drugs and alcohol. Well, being on crack cocaine for years is what triggered me to go to prison. After going to prison, I was always labeled as a bad person, and so I would go in and out again, being reincarcerated over and over, but I never had one opportunity for what they would call treatment. And so when I did finally, in 1993, I was able to get into a drug and alcohol program. And that program was called Forever Free. And what happened in there was they allowed me to know that, you know, there's a such thing as being traumatized, and that because of the extensive amount of abuse that I had endured, that I was actually suffering from what would be a PTSD, which is what mm-hmm. people suffer from after them leaving the war and coming home. So I had these PTSD symptoms that was going untreated, so I would never be able to manage life on my own without getting the therapeutic help that I needed. So that program called Forever Free allowed me to get that help.
So a different organization
yes,
helped
ma'am.
You. Now, how did you come about them? I mean, obviously,
well, in prison,
this was the last straw.
No, in prison, there was a pilot program, and there was like 100 women were allowed to participate. And they wanted to use the ones that was the worst of the worst. So I was number 87. I was allowed to participate in this drug program. Well, know that out of the 100 women who went through the program, something like 95 of us stayed clean and sober a year after release. And so that's how the state of California knew that treatment does work, and that we weren't bad people, but we were actually damaged people who needed to have some healing in order to recover from that condition that we suffered from. So after that program, I got out of prison. I went to another program called Cedar House, where I was taught how to live from scratch, how to live in a society of rejection, a society where people will close the door in your face, but how do I find that spiritual path? And, you know, it kind of reminds you of the story of the Wizard of Oz, where Dorothy just wanted to go home, and there was this yellow path that had been highlighted for her to follow. But we all know that Dorothy was unable to stay on that path, and she kept going off into the wilderness. Well, long story short, she kept having these encounters, but for people like myself, those encounters would be going to prison, you know, being raped or going through, you know, being violently beat up. But at the end of the story, when Dorothy finally made it to Oz and she was looking for this great being, what the guy told her, he says, Dorothy, you already had what you needed inside of you. So somebody needs to come and tell us that inside of us was still the Spirit of God, and no matter what we had went through, that he had not left us or forsaken us, and that we could be, you know, become brand new again. And that's just the moral of the story with Dorothy, is that she had to look inside of herself and go deep down. And we in the 12-step program and people who have recovered from drugs and alcohol and recidivism, we realize now that, you know, God wasn't finished with us yet. Even though society appeared to be through, that God wasn't. And so, again, like the Bible says, do all things, you can do all things through Christ, the one who strengthens you. Well, it's so because today, you know, I'm 18 years clean and sober. I have the ability to help other women come through a program to become clean and sober. We have the ability to regain these children out of the foster care system and help them to get on a healthy path. I mean, God is just so good. It's just remarkable.
And you know, you, something that you said, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, people don't know that they even have it, that they're experiencing it, if they don't seek some sort of help. And getting back to what you just said, if you don't know it's if you don't know it's inside of you, how will you ever pull it out? How will you ever reach it unless someone says, you know what? You are important. You are valuable. And, you know, some in our society, we've kind of walked away from affirming people and seeing people inner. We've been, it's like, I've heard of this lady, she had a minor infraction, and she wasn't able to, you know, be find a job, employment. And I was telling her, well, I don't understand how you cannot find employment. I don't understand why, if your life is changing. She goes, well, I have gone into prison several times. And it's like, oh, so it's not just one time. And they kind of gave up on her. And I'm like, oh, don't
give up. Let me
give
you a really good example. The Bible has a story about the woman with the issue of blood.
Yes.
Now, here's a lady that has an issue that she cannot cure herself. And because of society and shame and the whole family dynamic, they shunned her. Society shunned her. Her family shunned her. And she was forced to go live off on the outskirts of town because she had this issue. But see, one day she heard that he was coming to town. She didn't know who he was, but she knew if she could just get to him, she would find her healing. Now, imagine her coming through town and people snarling at her, sneering at her, asking her, why are you here? You don't belong here. Did you go?
Yeah, because,
we don't want
because,
you around
yeah.
here. All this rejection. But the Bible shows us that she went to town anyway. She went through all that rejection, and she knew she could just touch the hem of his garment that she would be healed. And the Bible said that she was healed immediately.
Uh-huh.
Immediately. So even though society had said, you don't belong, you have this disease that we don't want you around, she knew that there was a healing, and God gave her that healing. Jesus had to look behind him and say, who was that that drew on for me? He didn't even see who was behind him, but she came in town, and she got her healing. Now, when she got her healing, all the folks in town, they didn't appreciate the fact that she had got her healing. They wasn't like, oh, you're healed now, come on back in. They still wanted to keep reminding her about the issue that she had. But see,
when
you know what God has done for you, no society can't turn you back and keep you living in your past. You got to be able to stand on your foundation, and that's what we teach women today. We empower him, and nobody can use your past against you because God still has your future.
Exactly. And you know what? Jeremiah 29:11, which I've always quoted, he knows the plans that he has for us. He knows.
Exactly.
He knows what he wants for us. And when I was talking to this lady, I said, and I told her my story, and she was like, if you can do it, I can do it. And I'm like, you're right. She goes, I don't mean to offend you. You're not offending me. What women need to know now, that there is an opportunity, it's a time for change, and there's an opportunity out there.
And you know what's so remarkable is that, you know, we have a whole society that, although it be fragmented, there are a lot of good, decent people out there, you know, Christian people who really want to help and just don't know what to do. Because one of the things that you just said was about the word is. We have a God that is, not a God that was. And there are so many miracles that he's performing today. There are so many examples of his love and his healing that if more people would share their stories, their testimonies, and I'll use it as an example to what God can do. Because right now, you know, the devil, he's getting all his ads. He's on TV. He's marketing sex and drugs. He's marketing all the things that turn us away from God. But we need to be our Christian duty and use our stories of healing to market what God can do. Not just reminding people of what he did, you know, by the stories of the Bible, but the stories that that's happening today, because today I am a miracle. So I use my story to show
Amen.
Other women who are in prison, who are on drugs, I'm constantly in the paper, in the news, everywhere I can to let people know, yes, I was on drugs. Yes, I was homeless. Yes, I was all those things. But hello, today, it's been 18 years I've been clean and sober. I haven't had to drink. I haven't had to go to prison. I haven't had to sell my body or resort to any of those things because I was able to find a God of my own understanding. And that's what's so important is that we have to allow people to know that God will meet you where you're at. And we can't do that if we're so heavenly bound, we no earthly good.
Exactly. I love saying that. I love saying that. And another one is like we need to stop preaching and start working. We need to start working and helping other people. Start telling the testimony. Start showing how God has been with you. Instead of just preaching it, start showing. Start showing people where I have been. You know, people go. Some people tell me, well, you know, you shouldn't be telling your testimony because it's a little bit harsh. And you know, I feel like telling them, I rebuke you, Satan. Why? Because it's my story. I'm not living in the past. I'm letting them know where my God has taken me out from and where I'm at today. So when I tell people, hey, you know what? You too can do it. These women, they light up and they're like, I can't. But no one has ever told them. And, you know, one woman told me, you know, how do you expect to stop taking drugs when it's all over the media? And I know it's funny because society has a tendency of forgetting, or they don't forget, they don't care about what they're putting out there. It's like, why are you an alcoholic? Why are you going to be sitting there watching a TV, a show? Everything is about court, you know, all these light beers and beers and everything like that. And so, you know, a person is going through some stuff. They need to find, one, a good foundation, and that will be in Christ, and two, find people that will listen and help them through. And a lot of people want to just go, hey, you know what? You've been in prison. Oh, well, listen, I got to go. And it's why? Why? You know, I meet some of these women, and they're amazing women. Corporate America would have nothing over them because these women, once you teach them, they can take over. And I'm telling people, you know, give them the opportunity. That's all people need is a chance.
This is how we know that we need to have more, you know, people that are deeply rooted, you know, in Jesus at the helm. We need more Christians leading Fortune 500 companies. We need more Christians, you know, down at the TV programs, setting the agenda for some people. We need Christians to come out and take control of the community so that way we will live in a loving environment and we won't have to worry about women being ostracized because everyone, the Bible gives all the Christians examples of people who was in prison that God used them in a mighty way. So I know that it's because we have a lot of non-secular people who is running these companies and running the mainstream media that we are right now unequally advertised for what we can do. When I was in my corporate America job and I was thanking God that he gave me a job that I could afford some rent and pay health insurance, but the Lord told me to leave my employment to start Time for Change. So I kept saying, Lord, are you serious? Because there's no money there for me to start with, number one. Number two, I have a daughter in college, and she needs health insurance, and I don't know what to do. And, you know, and I realized then that I had started having less faith on God and more faith on that paycheck. But see, the Lord showed me in the middle of the night. He said, leave your job. I had one thing. I was like, well, Lord, you know I can't leave my health insurance because, you know, he ever saved me from cancer and he knew I needed health insurance. But that day right there that I told the Lord that in the middle of the night, my company came to us and told us that they will no longer be offering health insurance for level 2 and 3 employees. Now, mind you, I had been there almost 9 years, had had health insurance the whole time. So here's that final straw that the Lord showed me that, yes, Kim, you will be 100% dependent on me, not 99.9% dependent on me. I left that job on my sobriety birthday, which was March 15th, and so as of April the 1st, I left that job and started Time for Change. And immediately, everything that I needed to start this company was put in my path. As I searched for more information and I did more work and research on the internet and I went and met people who might have had information and I started networking, it would be one day someone would say, well, you know what, you really need to find you a grant writer because you got to start putting in grants. And then the next week I'll meet somebody and she'll go, oh, hi. hi, I'm so-and-so. I'm a grant writer, and I'm looking for somebody that I can work with for a project for my school. And, I mean, the Lord just lined things up immediately. And so I knew then that it was a that I was doing what I was supposed to do. And I didn't know the name. You know, I kept saying, okay, Lord, should it be Kim's House of Help? Or, you know, I was trying to think what it could be, and the Lord gave me time for change. I didn't know time for change was going to evolve the way it has, and we would be working on changing the laws that's unfair and unjust. We would be working on changing people's lives. I had no idea that I always thought it was about just providing a house. But see, God already knew the plan before I did it. I just need to be obedient to his will. So because of that obedience, I mean, I had to be pushed into it. Don't get me wrong. I fall short, but I finally did follow what he was telling me to do, and we've been blessed ever since. But today, I can say we have helped over 500 women come through our program to reach self-sufficiency. I mean, from everything from financial education, money management, independent living skills, transportation, counseling, leadership development, emergency shelter, and transitional housing. We provide all of that, and it's only been through the grace of God we've been able to do that. And so I know today, Vivian, why it is that we do what we do. I know what my passion, what my calling is. I know why I'm here. I'm here to show the world that God still is. And he's not a was God, but he's an is God.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Amen. And you know what? You know, speaking from your, you know, in of your organization, you have, and I see a lot of things popping up on Facebook, by the way. You're on Facebook, you're everywhere, and that's wonderful. And I just, you know, makes me, I hear it from women that have left the prison, but, you know, how bad is it for the woman or for the women serving time? I mean, how bad is it? Can you let us, can you give me a little information?
Uh-huh. Let me tell you this. When you're inside the penitentiary, you're inside another world, a world that's not on television, that's highly publicized. And there are things that go on in there that are horrible. I mean, we have to make laws like stop prison rape. That means that we have people on the inside who are being sexually assaulted, not just by staff, but by other inmates as well. You might have been a person who went to prison behind writing a bad check or, you know, by using some drugs. But now that you went to prison, you might be in a room with somebody who, you know, boiled their baby or, you know, or killed someone. So you have to adjust to this new environment as soon as you go in. There's no sections to categorize people based on how they came. You have a lot of young women right now, 19, 20, 21 years old, that have been given huge amount of time, serving 10 years, 15 years, 25 years, because you remember, prison has become a big business. And over the last 10 years, we went from having only like 1,000 or something women incarcerated to over 11,000 to 12,000 women incarcerated right now in the state of California. It's been this huge bust, and it all was around the war on drugs. And as we all know, the war on drugs was declared when drugs was on the down. Drugs was not on the rise up. But once the war on drugs was declared, then here comes the crack cocaine to all the communities, and now you have people on crack cocaine, and here's all these arrests that goes into all this law enforcement, that goes into building all these prisons and privatizing it, putting it on Wall Street, and then the next commodity became warehousing people. So you can be in prison, and you'll get a job immediately. But when you come home from prison, you're denied employment up and down the coast. You can go to prison, and in prison you have a place to sleep. But when you come home, you can't go into public housing. You can't go into private housing. So you're already homeless when you first come out. You have women on the inside, like myself, for example. I was on the inside of prison. I was diagnosed with a class 5 pap smear. That means that I had the beginnings of cervical cancer. Well, I did 2 years in prison. By the time I got out of prison, went to the drug program, and got my first job and got my first health insurance, I was able to go to the doctor. At that time, he said I had stage 3B. So my cancer from my cervix had spread throughout my whole body. It was in my lymph nodes, and I was given 90 days to live. And that was in 1996. lo and behold, God wasn't through with me yet. Today, the doctor that told me to go find my pastor, I was like, am I doomed? What's going to happen? He said, go find your pastor. Well, I didn't have a pastor. All I had was the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I do believe is a program that the Lord designed. I went to that program and told them what happened. Them people supported me and loved me. Long story short, my cancer came 3 times, but today I've been cancer-free for over 7 years. But that's because of a God that I serve. So the role that I play here in the community is not one that I take lightly. God has saved me from crack and saved me from cancer. But my point being, I was in prison when I got diagnosed with that condition, and I wasn't able to force them to send me out to the doctor. You're locked in there with breast cancer, cervical cancer. You could have a staph infection, and you can't make them send you to the doctor. You can't even go get hydrocortisone cream or treat any condition that could be mild. It's very hard in there. And the thing about it is that when people are in prison, they feel left out. They feel no one cares because there's not a lot of people coming to the prison. And it's really, really funny because the Bible says in Matthew that, you know, to go and visit the people in prison. I mean, that's one of the mandates that's there where, you know, feed the hungry, clothe the naked. So I don't see why we don't have enough people coming into the prisons, visiting women, and letting the people who have the prison understand that the community is coming in here. We will be talking with these women, and we will be able to hear what they're saying going on. It should be more of that. That's one of my pet peeves that I have, is that people need to really start getting back active and doing the work of the Bible, because faith without works is what?
Exactly. It doesn't... But, you know, let me tell you, so you're talking about the Great Commission, basically, you know, when, you know, we need to go out there and but not only the Great Commission, we're also talking in Matthew where it's like, when did we do all these things? When you came to visit me, you know, when I was in prison, when all these, you know, when Jesus responded. And I know that there are a lot of great ministries out there that are doing, what do you call that, prison ministry. But I remember being in Spokane, Washington, and if I'm wrong, someone please correct me. And I said, I would like to have a prison ministry here, you know, start one or be part of one. And they go, for the women, and they go, I'm sorry, they don't have prison ministry for women. They're not allowed to do that.
Exactly.
And I'm like,
but if there were enough Christians that band together, that took an action at the institution and demanded that we were allowed to go in there and do prison ministry, they would respond, because every time they're running for office, they're looking for the pastors of the pulpit. They love to come by your church and get in your pulpit and talk. That's what they do as politicians. So it's up to us to leverage that relationship and hold people accountable. The other thing I want to talk about is, what can people do? You know, number one, As an agency, Times Pain Foundation, we are a nonprofit, and as a nonprofit, we depend on donations. We're not funded by the government, because the government will hold you hostage and put you on gag order if you're rising up against it. And at Time for Change, we do challenge the government for their policies or what have you. So we always need donations. We have a website. It's www.timeforchangefoundation.org, and our phone number is 909-886-2994, and we're located in the city of San Bernardino. You can go on that website and take a look at some of our videos, and you read some of the information, and maybe you can actually give donation. We also have a website that's called TakeActionCalifornia.org. So that's TakeActionCA.org. And that site right there is designed for you to go on and take action against some of these bills that we're fighting. One known for a fact that's so inhumane, any female out there could understand how horrible this could be. Can you imagine being in labor, about to give birth, but you're shackled, your hands are shackled? So that's a bill that we're working on right now called the Anti-Shackling the Pregnant Inmate Bill. That's, you can find it on TakeActionCalifornia.org as well. I mean, that's just ridiculous. There's other bills on there as well, as you know right now, with these budget cuts or what have you. It's very important that we do not take out the brunt of this capitalistic world on all the low-income seniors. We have food bills on there, but we're trying to make sure that seniors have adequate enough food so that they can survive. You know, a lot of families depended on working for years and depended on Social Security being enough to take care of them, because that's what the government had said during that time. And now they're cutting it every other month. It's cut down, and we have a lot of seniors who are eating cat food, not having enough food. We need to make sure that we're no longer shutting these elderly people, who are our older brothers and our older sisters, shutting them into their homes where they're forced to live in houses with no air conditioning or eat cat food. Another thing that people can do also is volunteer. Go to your nearest shelter and work with the shelter to support them. A lot of times we run out of diapers. We run out of cleaning supplies. We run out of clothing for the women so they can wear. They come out of prison with absolutely nothing. So there's opportunities all over that people can take part in and just start somewhere, you know. And this is a show that hopefully is going to empower and uplift people. We don't want to bring people down about what they haven't done. We want to let you know that it's never too late for you to start.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you, what is the AB 568? Is that the one with, what exactly is that?
The AB 568, is that the prison bill with the anti-shackling bill?
Okay, so that is a that is the one. So for all those who are listening, it's A as in apple, B as in boy, 568. This is so that women are not shackled while they're trying to deliver our life into this world. You know, it's mind-boggling. It really is how that could be. Okay, so with that said, they're trying
then
to...
Then we have the SB 1266.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to say, the SB 12.
Uh-huh.
What is that one?
The SB 1266, that's the bill that has already passed. The governor signed it for the state of California. And what it basically says is that there's alternatives to custody. So it allows any female who was the primary parent of their children prior to conviction, allows them to stay in the community and serve their time there as opposed to being separated from their kids, causing their kids to be traumatized and have other issues. It's allowing them to stay in the community. So we're really excited that bill has passed. Unfortunately, it has not had any funding appropriated to it. So therefore, we're hoping that we can get funding for the implementation. Now, one of the things that's very crucial here is that you'd allow the parents. See, the silent victim in this whole thing is the children. What about the children? The children who are left without a parent, the children who are abandoned, and these are the children who go to school, low self-esteem, feeling left out, have anger, they haven't received any counseling, act out in school, and they too become labeled as a bad or incorrigible kid when actually they're suffering from some issues as well because of the abandonment.
Well, I have, and please, if I'm ignorant in this, please do correct me. I have seen generational prison people. I mean, inmates. I mean, it's like the father's in there, the son is in there, the mother's in there, and it's like, how can that be? And basically, it just seems like no one has taken the time to lead the child, because the child, of course, becomes an adult, and then they can do whatever they want. But I have seen that, where, you know, it's like, so your dad was in jail, and now you're in jail. Or your mom was in jail, and now you're in jail. And,
well,
and
think
what
about it
is
like
that,
this, right? Mm-hmm. It's called intergenerational. But now if you're a person who invested in jail, right, and you only get paid by having this commodity, so if I have the mother, then I have the kid, then I have the kid's kid, I'm getting more use out of my product. So he or me become product at that time. And so you would think, well, since we know if the parent went to prison, the children is at risk. So why aren't there resources targeted to that child to help that child to adjust to the situation and not succumb to the mental illness and succumb to the deficiency by not having caring adults in their life? We don't do that. We wait until the child acts up, and then we want to send in the police, the probation. We want to do things on the back end. We don't want to do the prevention and intervention. And this is where, as a society, we break down. And we sit back and we have scholars and PhDs and academicians who will tell you scientifically what's going to happen next. And if we don't intervene in those opportunities to change that person's lifestyle, get a person a new opportunity, they're going to just keep recycling in and out, in and out. You know, and unfortunately, that has happened a whole lot in our communities. And you'll take note that it's particular communities that are overly represented in the prison industrial complex. And those are the communities that are heavily policed. You know, they're very under-resourced. So you'll find a community with poor performance schools and lack of fresh vegetables in the grocery store and no parks and no jobs. And that condition is what sets up the stage so that it can become over-policed and it can become a place that you can pick people to come into the prison. And that's a real talk right there.
So me, member of a society, and all the society, members of society, what we can do is become volunteers, read up more. Now I'm reading up more than I ever had before on prison and the inmates, because it's something that I might be doing as I graduate from psychology, where I wanted to focus my emphasis on helping women from inside.
That would be wonderful.
But see, and you know what? I don't know if you received the link that I sent you, but it was Life After Prison, and it's from the Monitor on Psychology, and it was talking about how this professor, actually she's a doctor, Elizabeth McCune, has redefined what to do before and after, before, during, and after a person leaves the jail, the prison, and it's in Kentucky, and I don't know why that we're so much supposedly one of the larger states. Why are we not doing half of the things that she's doing? I mean, she's making sure that there's mentors when they come out. She's making sure that parole officers and those that are going to be involved with people that are leaving the prison have been trained to understand that they have a big part to do with them, with former inmates re-entering into society. And she has classes. She's taken on this role that she has classes. She has everything aligned so that when a person leaves, they go into a job, they go into better living conditions. Why that we're Californians, we're so advanced in so many things, yet I don't hear of that in our prison.
You have to understand. I mean, you have to look at this from the perspective that it really is that we do have a capability to do all those things, but that's not where the public will was, and that's not where the money is to be made. See, the money is not to be made with you going home, getting a job, taking care of your kids. The money's only to be made when you're laying in that prison bed and your kid has to go to these probation officers and to these counselors. See, so you have to look at it from the perspective of, you know, it was a big prison boom. Like, over the last 30 years, they only built one more university. Now it's University of Merced, but they built 33 more prisons. And so the focus of the Society of California was not on educating our kids. It was on incarceration. It was from the cradle to the prison pipeline, and it has grown. And that's why you'll see Marion Edelman and them from the cradle of prison, from the Children Defense Fund, working on issues, talking about, look what we as a society have allowed our focus to be, you know. And this goes back to what I was saying earlier about the need for, you know, all of us to do our Christ-like duty and come out into community and take control of that community and help, you know, spread the love of God and do the things that need to be done to help one another. And, I mean, I think it's not until then, till we see people actually coming out, you know, hey, somebody needs to run for city council. Somebody needs to run for supervisor. Run for these seats, because it's in these seats that we have the ability to make decisions that affects the law of the land. And I know that if we all as Christians came together to do the will of God, all we have to do is ask ourselves, what would Jesus do? So when there's a bill that comes down and says, should we cut off people's food stamps who we know don't have a job? Ask ourselves, what would Jesus do? And make a decision. If there's a law that comes and say, hey, should we allow more railroads to come here in this community when we know the environment has a lot of poisons in the air and we have a high number of kids with asthma and other respiratory diseases, what would Jesus do? So we would just have that as our go-to point. This world would be a better place.
Wow. Well, I'm going to ask you this question, and then we'll go on a quick break, and then I'll be right back. You say you've seen a major changes. Can you elaborate on some of those major changes when we come back? And we'll be back in about 2 or 3 minutes.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thoughts to consider. Time for Change Foundation is a place for homeless women and their children to call home. We all know that the word homelessness is a concern for many adults, and for children, it's quite scary. As the children come into Time for Change Foundation, they arrive hungry, tired, missing school, with a lack of luster in their eyes. At Time for Change, children become their number one priority. Time for Change Foundation's mission is to support their efforts to break the cycle of homelessness to creating opportunity of hope. What can you do? Become a volunteer or make a financial contribution to help Time for Change Foundation. Put the sparkle back in the lives of these amazing and beautiful children and their mothers. For more information, visit timeforchange.org or call 909-882-2994. Make a change today and put a sparkle in your eyes.
Okay, back with Kim Carter from Time for Change, who has been talking to us how she is making some changes with the help of communities and members of society. And it's amazing. If you haven't heard Kim Carter speak, she's a dynamo, and this is not to flatter her, it's to say the truth. The Lord says that we should help those that are in need, and to seek justice for those who have lost justice, to help the widows, to help those that are suffering. And we're back with Kim Carter. So tell me, major changes.
Well, one of the major changes that we've seen recently is that the governor's budget for the state of California has basically dictated to the Department of Correction and Rehabilitation that we cannot afford to lock up people the way that we do in California. And so as a result of that, you know, besides the federal government coming in and slapping the lawsuit on the Department of Correction and Rehabilitation, allowing them to know that it's inhumane the way they're warehousing people. So the prison is now looking for opportunities to do prison reduction. What that means for us is there's more opportunity to have women stay in the community in order to address their issues as opposed to going to prison. But that also means that we need to come together and we need resources in order to provide them with that mental health help that they're going to need. That's something that we can use support with from our listeners, is to please, you know, go online again to takeactioncalifornia.org, go to our website, timeforchangefoundation.org, make a donation, because we're going to see an influx of more women in the community desperately looking for a place in order to recreate their life. The other part of that is that there's now no opportunity to do volunteer programs within the prison. They've cut out the majority of their substance abuse program. They've cut out most of the schooling. So they're looking now for community partners to go in and provide educational opportunities. So they have new branches called the Community Partners Management, and that department will allow you to come in and volunteer as a group to provide some educational opportunity. And I think that's something that needs to be spread out, because it hasn't always been like that But now they're realizing that they can't continue to do business as usual. So that means it's opportunity for people like us who want to see people live their to their highest potential.
That's good to hear. I also, what I was reading, parole officers, there are some good ones, and there's a lot of bad ones, and that's what I hear from people. What I like also that there could some things that can be adapted from Kentucky, where our parole officers and those that are in charge and those that are helping, instead of looking at it as a punitive, they should be more, how can I help this person, and being trained on how to help a person.
Became intricately involved with the department, looking at the budget and working with the higher-ups, is that the parole department never was designed to assist people with getting off parole. Their whole purpose was just to supervise you, catch you when you're wrong, and lock you back up. And so now there's been this whole shift in CDCR from the top to the bottom, but some people in the middle have not accepted this new way of life within the department. And so when you take a department and you pull the resources from it, meaning that they don't have money for bus passes, they don't have money to help you with 1 month's rent, they don't have any vouchers for clothing, they don't have any resources to give you, and yet still as society we've been told that they were supposed to be there to help people, but they haven't been given the tools to help. And one of the frustrations that they have, and I say this because I truly know, they'll be one individual having to supervise 500 people. So there's no way you could possibly know where 500 people is located at and what they're doing and how they're doing. They also realize that there's a lot of people coming home who are homeless. You cannot supervise somebody who's homeless because when you're homeless, you don't know where you're going to sleep. Because you sleep up under one bridge one night, the next night somebody might have came and took that spot. Or the police might have came and raided that spot. Now you got to find another place to sleep. And so you see people who are continually homeless, but yet still the parole department is the one that's supposed to have been supervising you and managing you. He can't manage you. In San Bernardino, it's like 110 degrees out here on a regular day when it's really, really hot. Can you imagine living up under a bridge all night long and then have to get up in the morning and go see a parole officer and see him, but he will tell you, oh, you checked in today? No, it's not going to happen. So that's the issue as well. The other part of that is that if the community, meaning us society, is spitting you back into prison, you come home, we say, oh, we don't want you on our neighborhood. We don't want you living in this block. You can't get a job. We don't want to hire you for employment. Then this is what I call invisible bars. So just for your listeners' sake, I am the author of a report. It's called Invisible Bars, Barriers to Women's Health and Well-Being During and After Incarceration. I have co-authors Dicep Ojukwu and Lance Miller, who actually work for the Vital Statistics Department of the Department of Public Health. They actually helped me create this scientific quantitative report that actually went into the prison and got quantitative data to hear the stories of the women. And then we did surveys in the community, and we got the data, and we matched it up, and we put it into like 18 different themes of what it is that's happening. And we looked at programs that need to be created in order to intervene and help people. So this report is free online on our website. Again, it's www.timeforchangefoundation.org, and it's a free download. And so here you can go and you can see, hear the comments, hear what the woman is saying. We have a woman, let me just read you one.
Sure.
She put in there, this is my second violation. Every time I come to prison, I'm homeless. I lay down in places. I wake up. People are feeling on me. I've learned how to stay out long enough to get some type of help. But in the end, I'm back in prison. So when she's saying somebody's feeling all over her, what she's meaning is she's sleeping in some park or somewhere, and when she wakes up, there's some other homeless persons feeling on her, either trying to fill her pockets to get money out or trying to fill her up because she's a female. You know, mm-hmm. there's all type of stuff in this report that you can hear the women who are saying what their issues was and what they have to go back to when they get out. And they're tired. They're tired of recycling in and out of prison. They're tired of living the life of going to a person who's an abuser, abusing them, but they try to stay in the situation so they can have a place to stay and they get beat up. They're tired of that. And this book right here called Invisible Bars, it gives the scientific evidence of what needs to happen, interventions, and how people can help. And so this is the first time a formerly incarcerated woman ever did the research and created a report that could be used and held to high regard. And why I did that is because I was going to these meetings with the CDCR officials, and I would hear them listen to Barbara Owens, Barbara Blooms, and they're all PhDs. And so I said to myself, I have my PhD too, because I'm the one who have, I'm a subject matter expert. I'm the one that lived it. I'm the one that knows what really goes on. And this is not a test book. This is real life for me. So I created this report, and it's valid. The data inside is wonderful. And this report has been used in Massachusetts, all across the United States. At 72 different locations, they have cited this report as evidence in what they're doing. And it remains the same. Until we come together as a community and we support people with reentry, coming back in, and we help to change the policies that would deny a person food stamps, deny a person housing, deny a person employment, until we do that, we're going to see more turmoil, more children who are lost and turned out in the system because we have not addressed their basic needs, and that's to have a home that is nurturing and supportive and a mother that cares for them.
Wow. And this report, okay, now, the report is not a book. I thought you were writing a book or that you wrote a book, but this is an actual report that anyone can download and read it and take it to, if they know somebody that can make some change, take it to them. Someone that can, you know, I believe that, okay, one finger, yes, we need all our faculties. But when we have one finger, that's one. But when you have a whole hand and you wrap it into a fist, you have so much power. You know, you can poke a person and go, stop, it's hurting, or you can poke at a problem and point at a problem. But when you take action, you're actually, it's movement, it's energy and synergy. And we need that. We need that as we continue to fight for the injustices and fight for the people that don't have a voice. So basically, these two individuals were able to help you. Information that they can actually find in your website, and if they have more questions, they can actually contact you. So with that said, what are the things that you are doing to spread throughout the United States and the world?
I am a motivational speaker, so if any given time someone wanted me to come out to their event or their facility to perhaps do a training or to empower and enlighten their board of directors or what have you, I'm available for that. Again, go to my website or either call us on the phone. The number is 909-886-2994. We are doing media campaigns. Again, we're raising awareness about the conditions of imprisonment and talking about Time for Change Foundation and what we are doing. Thank the Lord that we've just been able to acquire our first permanent housing project, and that project right there will allow 7 families to live forever because, as you know, they deny housing to women who have prior felony convictions, and a lot of women go through our shelter program, and they are rehabilitated, and they are ready to live their lives, but because of their past conviction, landlords reject them from housing, and so we've been able to overcome that barrier by getting our own apartment building. We're definitely going to be needing help because the women who come from our shelter, they do not have furniture, they don't have refrigerators, stoves, or what have you, so if any of your listeners are able to support in any type of way like that, we definitely would appreciate them, again, calling us or going to our website. The other thing that we're doing is that we have created a Center for advocacy and leadership training. And with this center, what we're doing, we're providing training to people in the community to teach them how to be advocates. How do you address your local elected official? How do you go to a meeting? How do you know where the meetings are held? How can you take action and be there and be counted? So we have this manual that we created, and we're doing trainings all across California right now with that. The other thing that we're doing, Time Change, is so exciting is that we're developing the leadership of our clients. So we have these women, homeless women. Some of them are formerly incarcerated. Some of them are not. So one thing is clear to notice that not all of our women that we serve have been to prison. So we kind of do a prevention method as well. But anyway, we're developing them into leaders, and most recently they're going to be going to Sacramento next week, and they're going to be working on these bills. And let me give you the number. The number is AB6. It's called Pass the Cal Fresh Act. Well, Cal Fresh is like another word for food stamps. And what it's saying is that if there's a female who has been convicted of a drug felony, but she has been rehabilitated and can test clean, can you please allow her to have food stamps, because it's very important that she's able to feed herself and her family. The other thing we're going to be working on is this AB-828, and that's with Senator Swanson. And what that one is talking about ending this lifetime ban. In 1996, under the administration of, name elude me right now, but Mr. Clinton, Hillary's husband, they passed a law that prohibited anybody from having, who had a drug felony, from accessing any federal subsidy. A federal subsidy could be food stamps, could be welfare, could be student loans, and public housing. And what that did was it left a lot of people who went to prison, it left them unable to go back and move in with their families who was living in low-income housing. Those people also were denied food stamps. So AB 828 would allow California to remove the lifetime ban on those nonviolent drug offenders. And it's important to realize this. Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, who killed people, chop them up, boil them, and eat them. If he got out tomorrow, he will be eligible to go down there and get food stamps and get welfare and get housing. But because you're the person who was on drugs, when you get out, you're denied all these different things. And that's all that I'm saying. That will be called an unjust law that needs to be changed. We definitely want to work on that. And then we're talking about AB 69. That's to increase the food stamps for seniors. We talked about that earlier. And then we got people who are unemployed, which is SB 43 with Senator Liu. And that'll help the unemployed Californians get the food stamp that they need. Because for so long, with the way the economy is, which, you know, in my opinion, the people who made off like fat rats, all the big bankers and all those ones who had all that money invested in the war, made like a fat rat, but the rest of us have been victims of the recession. Many of us have lost our retirement funds, and we're living from check to check again, and things are going higher and higher and higher, but the cost of living is going higher and higher and higher, but the amount of the checks that we receive is smaller, and the number of jobs has decreased, and gas done went up. And so here you see the need to have people who are on unemployment, who are still struggling to be able to get food stamps because it's subsidizing their income. I mean, there's so many things that's going on. Every day that we think about, there's some politician in Sacramento or Washington, D.C., who's making a decision that affects our lives. And if we're not at the table or our voice is not being heard, we're just being subject to it. And I feel like, you know, a lot of times that we are just asleep. And things are going on, and we're just saying, okay, Lord, you handle it, you handle it. But the guy that I started said, you take one step, Kim, I'm going to take two. He doesn't tell me I get to sit back, relax, and rest on his laurels. Mm-hmm. That I need to be a doer of good work. And this is why it's important that I continue to do what I do, to not only show God that I appreciate him saving me from the wretched bowels of drugs and alcohol and cancer, but to let other women know that we still have a worth. We still have a value, and our voices still need to be heard.
Wow. Yeah, you're right. Our voices need to be heard. And, you know, when we stay silent, in our silence, we are actually letting other people dictate who we'll be, how we will live, and how we will be in society, and I don't want somebody else to dictate to me how I'm supposed to live. And I guess if I don't want that, I need to listen. I need to be able to listen, and I need to pay attention, and I need to go ahead and speak up. You know, unfortunately, people don't, they think that, oh, what can I do? Well, what can I do? You could do a lot. Just get involved. Right now, I'm learning. Like today, that word that I kept on saying, what? How do you say that? What is that? And I started realizing, you know what? There's just so much that I don't know yet. Like you said, people have to start getting into understanding more prison life, getting involved, volunteering, doing your intern. If you want to know anything about prison life and you're a psychology major, go into the prison system. They'll need you there too. Learn. And whatever you learn, after you do your intern, go back and work there if you can. But let other people know what's going on and be a voice for those people because, for those people, meaning those who are hurting, those who are incarcerated, whoever, the widow, the child who has been molested. What I want to do, and I was telling my husband, I think the statute of limitation should be raised to 50 years old. None of this 20 years old. Why? Because we know in psychology, hear this, in psychology we know that around 35 to 40 is when a person starts thinking, oh my goodness, you know what, this is really affecting me. It has affected me all my life, right? Like you said, post-traumatic stress disorder. Okay, guess what? Those things are affecting. And the statute of limitations should be raised, not to 20 years old, but should be raised where if our medical bills are being used or we're incurring medical bills because of somebody that raped you when you were 5 years old, 7 years old, 10 years old, they're still alive and living the life, there should be some punitive damages there. I know that they're, but people are telling you, oh, no, that's just a huge undertaking.
And well, do you know that in prison, out of 100 women, 75 of them have been molested or sexually assaulted prior to the age of 10? That's a common denominator. That means at some point in time, that abuse coupled with whatever else happened in our lives was one of the leading factors that led us into a pathway where incarceration would be the only result.
Wow.
And that's really sad because, and all domestic violence and all the statistics talk about every 30 seconds somebody's getting beat up. Well, just imagine how every hour some child somewhere is being fondled or molested or taken advantage of, and she's under the age of 5 or 6 or 7.
Uh-uh.
That's just sad.
And, Martin Luther King said, let no man pull you low enough to hate him. And a lot of these women have so much hate because someone failed them. Someone allowed someone else to hurt them.
And the thing about it is that there's a healing in that. There's a healing in that because it's not that you had the experience. It's how you came through the experience that shows you that there's a healing. But if no one ever even acknowledged to you that you was victimized and always called you the bad person, you the perpetrator, and no one ever talked to the little girl inside of you that was hurt, then you're constantly feeling like, hey, I'm being treated unfairly here. I was on crack. Yeah, I did go, in a grocery store and walk around and eat food and didn't pay for it. I did those things. But at the same time, deep down inside, something happened to me as well, and no one never wanted to acknowledge that, and that pain festered. And that's why it's so important that we get women involved with treatment, that they can get help and talk about those issues and go ahead and break free from that, because there is a healing in that.
All I know, there's a lot of healing to be done.
It definitely is. I'll tell you one thing, the show that you're doing right now is wonderful. I want to commend you for the work that you're doing and giving a platform we could talk about these issues because, albeit no one's going to be at the pulpit talking about when I was molested, what happened to me. And these are real issues, which is why a lot of people find it really hard to go into the organized church because they want to talk about what really happened. And it's like, It's not to be talked about. But the truth be told, the freedom comes in talking about the truth.
And it's true. And you know what?
And the Lord said this truth shall set you free. Well, I got to be able to talk about the truth. I can't talk about it in a roundabout way. I need to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you know what? I've had people, when I give my testimony in church, in some churches, your testimony scares people. It's the truth. If they didn't go through it, that's fine. They don't have to deal with it. But it's that woman who continuously gets back on drugs and gets back on into prostitution and keeps coming through those doors, that's the woman that I'm reaching. That's the woman that I know for certain, with every fiber of my being, is being molested or has been molested or has been raped. Those are the kind of MOs. And they're like, well, you know, we've never had those problems. Then good for you. God bless you. But don't
exactly.
tell me
but
that my
ran
testimony.
You up in the church because for so long we thought that church was for perfect people, but for people who need to be saved from something. And that's okay because our thing is that there's a healing in the storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and everybody wants to keep silence, but what does Martin Luther King say? Martin Luther King Jr. says, our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter. And there are a lot of people sitting in our pews, women and men, sitting in our pews every single weekend, going, I need to talk to somebody or I'm going to die. I need to talk to somebody or I'm going to kill somebody. I need to talk to somebody or I'm going to take my drugs again. And it's unfortunate that, you know, in the reborn experience, and this is why, you know, the Lord is, like, awesome. When we are reborn again, we are going to go and reach out to people. We are going to do God's work because we are the only Jesus anybody will ever see. And so we need to go out, go to the streets. You know, people tell me, how can you go to Compton? You know, Compton is so dangerous. And if I don't go, who is?
Exactly.
Who will? And so, you know, I just say, you know, thank you so much for that. I'm just excited that you came on our show because, you know what, I am now more prone to seek an intern in a prison. Because
the Bible
of the fact
says, put on the full armor of God. So
mm-hmm.
fear not. If the work that the Lord's calling you to do is in a place that people would think is unsavory or unhealthy, that's why he needs to send one of his soldiers up in there because there needs
exactly.
to be a healing up in there. That's why he's sending you on that in that path, on that assignment.
Mm-hmm. Preparing the path. And of course, you know, I hear it from people that, you know, nobody is ever going to change. You know what? Tell that to the person who's talking to me clean and sober for 18 years, like you.
And all the
Tell
other women who come before me, who have gone after me. And we come
exactly.
together and we share each other's successes and we celebrate things like getting our kid out of the CPS system, getting our first job, learning how to do the computer. I mean, there's so many things we celebrate because we're back to life. And the thing about it is that we're not going to let no one run us back into the penitentiary. So we're here, we're registering to vote, we're taking our place in the community, we're going on PTA boards, we're going on all type of commissions, and we're becoming involved with the society that used to reject us.
Mm-hmm. Like someone told me, oh, we don't work with them, we try not to, those are disenfranchised individuals. And I'm going, it could be your daughter, it could be your son, it could be your cousin. In fact, it might be, and you don't know that. And that's how I knew that what was my mission when I went to a Salvation Army, and I went there just to visit a friend who was playing on a band, and I ran into my cousin, homeless, living in their
shelter
lobby for 2 years, in their lobby, not even in the shelter. Okay, she would come in at night. And, you know, and I just, like, said, you know what? I know that God put me here. I'll help you. She's been clean and sober, off the street, and doing great things since 2005. That's
See,
when
Lord,
I knew
Lord heals. The Lord heals.
He does. And I, you know, Satan is such a liar, and that's the bottom line. Satan is a liar, and you know, if we don't start looking at other people as a family, as a member of a family, or the society. I mean, it's somebody else's child. It's somebody else's person. It's somebody else's family. But in actuality, it's all
family.
Of us living. Yeah, it's all of us. It's our family. So
we're one body within Christ.
Yes, and if people start realizing that, they would be further ahead. Kim, I just...
Say one more thing before we get off the air, though, just so your listeners will know what they can do. Please go online to www.timeforchangefoundation.org. Look at our website. If you can, please send a donation. It could be $25, $50. We definitely need support to help these women who are rebuilding their lifestyle. Go to our Take Action California website. That's takeactionca.org. Become a member. Sign on. Take action to help stop the shackling of pregnant women who are in labor, to help with the bills that we're working on to increase the food stamps and remove the lifetime ban. And we can always use volunteers. And remember, we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us.
Amen. And, you know, I was going to ask you, if a person wanted to volunteer in your organization, what's the criteria for that?
So go to our website, www.timeforchangefoundation.org. Send a comment or call our office, 909-886-2994. Ask for myself or Shonda Hutton. Again, the website is www.timeforchangefoundation.org. It's all spelled out. We're located here in the city of San Bernardino.
Okay, any final words before we go to our listeners?
I just want to say thank you to you for what you're doing. God bless you and your work. Again, I appreciate your listeners. And please, you guys, you can make a difference. You can make a phone call. You can make a difference. You can go online. You can send a donation. But you can do something. And remember, again, you can do all things through Christ who strengthens you.
Thank you so much, Kim. And we will be talking to you later on in the month on other things too. But we just want to thank you. May God bless you and continue to bless your organization. But let me tell you one thing. Thank you for accepting the mission that God has given you and for the Reborn Identity.
Thank you. Have a great evening, everybody. Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you, likewise. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, you know, what an awesome lady Kim Carter is. I am so tickled and so honored because she was on our show. If you have any questions regarding Kim Carter or her organization, I can vouch for it. Who am I? I'm just a servant of the Lord, but I've worked with Kim Carter in areas where we've been in meetings together, and I've had lunch with her, and I have seen what God has done in her organization. Everybody's expecting some kind of check back from IRS or extra funds around. Really pray about it, but consider strongly. I'm hoping that the Holy Spirit puts a burden in your heart to consider Time for Change. They are an amazing organization and so much to be learned. We'll be back after this message.
Community resources.
It's La Sierra's University's second annual Revo fundraiser, which will be held May 15 at 6:30 p.m. at the Alumni Pavilion and will feature its popular fashion show of creative clothing lines designed by students. That's right, designed by students. This event will include auctions and raffles. The fashion show will include an auction of clothing pieces created by the designers. Their aim this year is to raise $20,000 to benefit International Justice Mission, a faith-based human rights agency in Washington, D.C. The organization operates in 12 countries to aid in the prosecution of human traffickers and to help rescue and rehabilitate their victims of slavery, sexual exploitation, and other forms of violent oppression. Don't miss it. For more information, please contact Larry Becker, Executive Director of the University Relations, La Sierra University, Riverside, California, 951-785-2460. Once again, that's Larry Becker, La Sierra University, 951-785-2460.
Well, welcome again, and we have Kim Carter with Time for Change. Once again, timeforchange.org. Please visit and see what they have. And if you want to be a volunteer, you know where you can go. And really think about it. Pray about it and see. Next week on The Reborn Identity, May the 15th, Ruthie and I will be interviewing Deborah Piguet and her husband, Daryl Piguet. And it's going to be how to, you know, tame your, I believe it was stress. But it's a combination of all the tame of your series, it seems like. And we're going to be really excited on how to do that. Now, we know that stress is a major factor of us to have heart attacks, especially women, gain weight, lose sleep. Stress can be a killer. So go ahead and tune in next week. I will be in Texas with Ruthie Munoz as she graduates from the university. And I am excited for her as well as I'm excited for everyone who is accomplishing their goals. I would like you to remember to pray for those women who are incarcerated, who have not been able to see their children, and to send them a special Mother's Day blessing and prayer. With that said, I will end early evening today because of the nature of the holiday. But good night, everyone. And I want you to always remember to keep yourselves educated, not only in the word, but keep yourself educated in all that you do. Help others, do good unto others, visit the sick, visit the widow, the shut-ins. Reach out to those who are in pain, and that you may have a blessed week, and let us know how we can help you. Let us know how we can pray for you. Keep your eyes focused on Christ, and until next time, may God richly bless you.
The Reborn Identity Blog Talk Radio was brought to you by the following sponsors: Rushing Media, a full-service public relations, marketing, and strategy company; Creative Network Solutions, creating possibilities for the future of your business; Palo Enterprises, a professional services company, serving the needs of our individuals with notary, title abstract, insurance, real estate, and photography services; and Hype Seminars, preparing, exploring, achieving the power of choice.